929-299-1269.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system. You are the only party in this conference.
Open VoIP 929-299-1269. Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
One other party is in this conference.
Hello, this is Jazz Maz on SDF Open VoIP on AnonRadio.net. Just calling in tonight to see if there is anyone around that would like to talk. Anyone can call, anyone can talk about whatever they like. You can dial with your regular telephone service by calling 929-299-1269. Or if you have an SDF VoiceOver IP account, you can just simply dial extension 1088. More information about the SDF VoiceOver IP system can be found at sdf.org in the tutorial section.
Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
I don't know if I have anything interesting to report tonight. Just a little time on my hands for a change on Sunday night. So I figured I would call in and see if there's anyone else around. I guess I'll take a peek over at SDF's comm mode chat, see if anyone is paying attention there. Looks like Pardon me, JWH and Pizza Power there. Hey guys, how are you doing tonight? It looks like Yahoo is sending me some account alert information that I guess, this is maybe another indicator that personal services under Yahoo.
Open voice 929-299-1269.
Sort of imposing sign-in limitations. It's basically nagging me that they're going to deactivate my account unless I sign in within a certain date. And of course, the only reason why I have those Yahoo accounts were to participate in a number of Yahoo groups, which are now in the process of, the web interfaces are gone for that stuff. I think they're still relaying email through them, but I think that's due to terminate in early December, I want to say. So, I don't know. What is Yahoo going to provide people after that? Obviously, they still have a search engine. They still have, news aggregation and other things. But it makes me wonder. Also, it makes me wonder about sort of the relationship between AT&T and Yahoo. Because originally, I guess when AT&T owned Yahoo, that the email system went over to there, and I think the last time I checked documentation that the SMTP relays for them were still through Yahoo. And I'm not sure about the current webmail. I don't typically use their webmail interface for anything anymore. The only AT&T account I have is basically an old grandfathered in Ameritech account that's tied to my internet service, and I don't typically receive any valuable email on there, just essentially AT&T system notices and a collection of spam, I imagine. Basically going, I check it once every couple of months just to make sure. And there's nothing I need to respond to in there. But in the past, I know that was handled by Yahoo. I don't know if they've moved that to AT&T-controlled equipment since the Verizon sale. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't worry too much about that relationship, except for the fact that my brother's primary email account is tethered to my internet access. So, it's like, what happens when all that stuff goes offline? When they decide, even providing email accounts is not worth their time, or when they decide that AT&T needs to get lost if they're still in fact processing email for them, for AT&T, and various iterations of Bell system domains, or I should say former Bell system, more like conglomerates, or I forget what they refer to that as. it, yeah. As far as the Yahoo account that's attached to the account that to the email address that I use for accessing some Yahoo groups, I think I will probably just kill that off at some point before Yahoo groups goes away for good. I think AT&T got Google by way of the AOL Time Warner purchase, and more recently, I think it's Verizon that purchased Yahoo from AT&T. They basically peeled off Yahoo from the collection of AT&T stuff. But I think they still have Time Warner and maybe AOL in name, at least. But I think AOL may have gone the route with Yahoo, but I think they still have Warner Media stuff simply because, you know, they were attempting to
open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Oh, Pizza Pal, the number to call in is 929-299-1269 if you're using regular telephone service. Otherwise, you can dial in with your SDF Voice over IP account by driving extension 1088 if you happen to have one set up and ready. But back when AT&T was, after AT&T had acquired Yahoo, it seemed that Yahoo was handling things like email access and a few other things for AT&T for a number of years. So makes me wonder, you know, how long any of that is, although I think my brothers mentioned that maybe they've switched back to some of the email stuff is switched back to AT&T systems, but, you know, like I said, forward-facing stuff, last time I looked at it, it still looked like, you know, the public SMTP servers were still Yahoo's for, like, recommended mail user agent setups. But I guess I could get off my butt and actually go look that up now and see if any of that has changed. I think the last time I looked was several months ago, probably last year, almost a year ago, because I think the time that I that stuff is important to me is when it comes time to renew my internet service plan that I'm paying month to month, but you know, it the way some companies do business, they're like, well, we'll give you this rate for this number of months, and then you have to call back and negotiate a new rate. And although it's not, you know, technically an annual contract, I could back out of it at any point. It still changes somewhat year to year. That's another thing that worries me, that it's coming up again, and it always seems like pulling teeth to try and keep a reasonable price for a reasonable amount of service. The situation with having my brother's primary email account tethered to my internet account, I think I've been trying to get them to disengage it and not have had much success with that. But, I would prefer that they transfer it to his account rather than keep it on my account, because then it gives me a little more leverage when it comes time to renegotiate pricing on internet service, that it's like, well, all AT&T is to me, for the most part, a internet connection and not much more. So, in other words, they don't handle my primary emails or secondary email addresses anymore, and none of the services I use on a regular basis are kind of tightly bonded to any particular internet service. So, other than that one email account,
Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Trivial to change providers if I so decided. AT&T has always had the price creep sort of scenario where, the longer you're with their service, the more expensive it seems to get for not necessarily much better service. Or should I say just simply better service? More better, yeah, great. I guess I'm going to mute my mic for a while. I'll continue to listen into the conference bridge. If someone happens to join in, I'll pick up and say, hey. Otherwise, I'll probably check back in towards the end of the voiceover IP block of time. And once again, anyone that wants to call, you can use your regular telephone service by dialing 929-299-1269. The open VoIP block is largely just sort of a period of time set aside for members or interested parties to kind of just get together and talk about whatever. So Oh, well, I guess I will mute now and jump back on later. Until then.
There are two other parties in this conference.
Hello?
Hello? Oh, hey, Jasmine, this is Pizza Pal.
Oh, hey, Pizza Pal. How have you been?
Oh, not bad. Not bad. Just, my volume's a little higher. Just making a couple of margaritas and hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. It's not bad. Whoops. It's weird.
Me, it's just coffee.
Yeah. All this late?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter to me that much. The coffee doesn't really keep me up. But at some point, I will just, you know. It helps when I need to stay up, when I feel the need to stay up. You know, I think mm-hmm. it's more of a, more of a psychosomatic effect. I don't know. Yeah.
I used to be like that. I used to be like that, but now I'm very sensitive to it.
Yeah, and there are times that that I can be too. I think. You know, if I'm drinking coffee regularly, I'm not as sensitive to it. But if I stop for a while and then mm-hmm. return to the habit of, you know, essentially a pot of coffee a day, then it can be a problem.
Yeah, I drink a cup of coffee at like 5:30 this evening. I was like, ooh, that's on the edge. Yeah, like,
although I did go through a period of time in the earlier part of the stay-at-home order for the pandemic where I was low on coffee for a while.
And
wasn't willing to go out until I really had to go out. And it's like went down to, I think, a single cup of coffee a day in the morning because that seemed to be the period of time when I felt I most needed it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's good. It's good to dial. I'm figuring out what's wrong with why I can't connect with to the conference bridge with my SIP account. I don't know if the internet is like I don't even know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also I think SNJ was saying on ComChat earlier today and yesterday, I guess we've been the victims of somewhat of a targeted attack yet again. Who knows why? It just happens sometimes, I guess. Is that you, Pizza Pal, with the bursts of TTY noise, or do we have somebody else on the secret extension?
Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Yeah, I don't know what that noise is. Yeah, that's weird.
But yeah, I guess we had some issue this weekend with that. That they were, I guess, targeting the Mastodon server and the Anon radio.
That sucks.
Don't know about the SIP server specifically, but I imagine, you know, any sort of visible resources that is likely to get them results that they can, you know, basically see. The after effect is what they're going to go after to some degree.
Was it like a denial of service like sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's like flooding, distributed denial of service, sort of a flooding attack kind of situation. Like I think SMJ mentioned last night that Excel is going to have to reset the Anon Radio server at some point because I guess it was jazzing up the metrics on it, the statistics. It was showing some ridiculous amount of connections, and it's like, okay, that's not right. It's like, yes, there are entities connecting to it, but not actual listeners.
That's lousy. Oh, well, I guess.
It's not the first one that SDF has had to weather. I'm sure it won't be the last one, and they seem to be able to deal with it. And it sounds like from past conversations that at least the ISP or co-location that the servers are in are more than happy to kind of work with SDF to help kind of mitigate these kind of attacks when they happen. Whereas I've known in the past some places are pretty awful about that. Oh, if you get a targeted attack. They're like, we don't want you here.
Yeah, like, you're costing us money. Yeah. That's, That's good. I put a bit of, like, the cayenne pepper in the margarita. Make kind of, like, a spicy drink. Yeah. I gotta get this Sun Ultra 5 working. I gotta get an NVRAM chip for it.
Oh, it's always annoying. Yeah,
I gotta figure out what kind of
they're real time clock and pram, right? Programmable read only. With the Class Computer Group here, we were kind of going through that where someone had gotten some workstation-y kind of things, and I think two out of three had bad pram on them, and it's like, the pram's integrated into the real-time clock module, and they're kind of not all that common to come across anymore. I mean, it's harder to find even new old stock, and since they're battery backed, the new old if they've
That's
been sitting in the shop.
The guy I got it from told me that like you can get them for like $20 or something.
That's kind of expensive, but I guess if you can't get them elsewhere. Yeah. But the biggest problem with even if they're new old stock that I worry about is that. they're battery backed, so at some point the new old stock is going to be non-working too. Especially if I don't know if Dallas is actually manufacturing any of that, or if Dallas exists, or if someone else has taken over that business.
I saw something on the web somewhere where somebody had made their own little replaceable battery.
Yeah, that's a thought that I'm thinking like a low-powered microcontroller might do that. Like some of the MSP 430s were often kind of used in that respect, that they could be very low power and could still operate at the resolution you would need to kind of have it operate as a real-time clock. But although really the real-time clock isn't the important thing, the important thing is that programmable memory.
I guess there's a way to get them to boot without the clock working or whatever.
Yeah, I think you can. There's probably a keystroke you can get it to do to reinitialize the pram, or reinitialize the default system settings in memory to default state and ignore the pram read, but I don't remember specifically.
Yeah.
I know, like, early Macintoshes had that sort of problem, too, that...
Open VoIP 929-1269.
...and real-time clock, but when the batteries would fail, the pram would get corrupted and would cause boot failure. And some of the tricks for that is, you know, turn it on, turn it off, turn it back on again really quick. And I guess the theory is that, you know, the pram will hold, you know, will hopefully hold the charge long enough to, you know, when it turns on, it'll eventually reset to default state and to a default known pattern reset state. And if you turn it off and on again, quick enough, it won't corrupt quickly enough, and the, you know, firmware on the machine will see it as just uninitialized programmable RAM, you know, pram rather than, and basically initialize it to a default state rather than try to read invalid data out of it. And you can kind of get them to boot that way.
What makes it programmable is like, is it so like it can like have like the file system,
a lot of these pram modules are just battery back low power static RAMs.
Okay.
Like I said, in the case of like the Sun stuff, it's integrated into the real-time clock module and it's battery backed by a battery in the real-time clock module, which makes it problematic if you can't find the correct replacement part. Whereas,
but
you know,
like if you want to have like a password for like boot or something like that, is that like what it says?
Well, it's not just that. It's maybe disk geometry and, you know, some of the other system information required that takes time to kind of probe and restart. It looks like Haran is listening to us. Maybe he'll join in. I know he's called in a few times. Sometimes he will play music down the channel, I think.
Oh, this is,
which is kind of weird, but it's fine. If no one's talking, why not? But yeah, often it's just storing system parameters that, you know, it's a little bit more of an effort to regenerate from a cold state. So, or back in the day when, you know, less hardware was auto detecting and had to be specifically set.
Totally. I've got all these iBooks from 2002. There's some like G3 iBooks, and I had one of them working like it was. I had Debian on it, and it could boot to the console, and I could run Tmux and you know, pretty much anything from the console. But then I messed it up trying to install like the proprietary firmware. I'm not sure what happened like exactly, but now it won't do anymore, and it's been a couple months even. I forget all the stuff I did to get it. But it almost, I don't know. I might try again, but I'm thinking, I think they have like some of the good like 32-bit power PC packages.
But yeah, in the case of like the Apple stuff, you know, the RTC, the real time clocks are separate from the batteries, so you can only take the battery out, and then also I think most of the firmware is often support a pram reset from the keyboard.
Yeah, I know some of that. Yeah, you gotta reset. I don't think that's the problem with this. I don't know. I think I didn't really follow the directions exactly.
Yeah.
I think maybe I needed to update the kernel too, and I didn't do that. Or maybe I did update the kernel and I wasn't supposed to do it. Something like that.
Yeah, you did something that generated a non-bootable system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the other trick would be to try booting from like a piece of external media. I know that generation of stuff could boot from external USB devices.
Yeah, I think if I boot from the CD-ROM, I can probably go in there and box it. I tried FreeBSD and I tried OpenBSD too.
Yeah, some of the older Debian versions that support PowerPC architecture, they have CD images that are
open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Mac hardware. So yeah. it might permit you to use it as a rescue disk at least.
Oh no, I can definitely do that. Yeah, that's part of it. Getting it to even work in the first place, I have to do that. As the first time, you pretty much have to do that for some reason. I forget.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the boot logic on those are a little weird, especially things pre-open firmware.
The keyboard, I really like the keyboards on them. They're like for a laptop keyboard.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually had the pleasure of playing with an iBook anytime. I've seen them. They've been in my presence, but I don't know that I've actually logged any keyboard time on them.
Yeah. I've got like five or six of them. At one point I installed OS 9 on one of them. There's like this like thing, it's called like OS 9 Lives or something. And it's, I don't know, like people just run all this OS 9 stuff.
So is that Mac OS 9 or is it OS 9? What is that?
Yeah, Mac OS 9.
Like, yeah.
9.22, whatever it is. Like,
Yeah, I know. Some people like the older classic Mac operating systems. Like I like System 6 on the Motorola stuff. 7.5-ish, 7-ish on the older PowerPC stuff. And then probably on more contemporary PowerPC, well, not very contemporary anymore, but that last couple generations of PowerPC architecture that the iMacs and generation 3, 4, and 5 stuff.
I think maybe I'm gonna try and work with the OS 9. The OS 9 thing seems to work the best at this so far.
It probably has most functionality in terms of internet usability, without going to 10.
I might mess with that. 10 is so slow on them. It's crazy.
I know, because it's moved so far ahead. I mean, there are. There were versions for the, I think I've got a Strawberry iMac, which is a faster G3, I want to say, with more memory.
Yeah. They have 128 megabytes of RAM.
So.
Which it takes a grip just to
I remember when Unix workstations, 32 megs were a lot, right? Sad, but
it's not bad. You can do a lot with it, though. I mean,
I used to run Debian on my G3 Mac. I had a a Lime 3, I think it was a 333 megahertz power PC-based iMac that I used for a long time. It's sort of a all-in-one, because it was, you know, convenient, because it's an all-in-one machine.
Oh, yeah.
Just easy to set it on any desk anywhere and just use it. And I used that for a good long time. And like I said, I think I still have a functioning Strawberry, which I think is probably a little faster, like I think 400 or 450 megahertz with like half a gig of memory in it. I think actually has OS 10 installed on it. And it does, and the release it has on it actually runs okay, but you know, you run into that problem of, you know, it's usable, but yeah, I don't know that I would want to use it for primary machine or anything like that. Unless I was
those iBooks are cool. I like them a lot. I'm gonna keep chipping away at it. I kind of lost track of it a little bit. And gotta retrace some of my steps, but I'm pretty sure I can get like a X11 thing running and get the Wi-Fi and stuff. Like, and if I could get like maybe like i3 window manager or something on there, that'd be stunning.
Like, the window manager I like to use on low actually you like to use it on any machine, but it works well on low resource machines too, is Fluxbox.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's sort of a black box derivative with sort of the greatest hits. You know, things that would have been plugins are integrated into it, like it's got, the dock and time.
Open
and
VoIP 929-299-1269.
And that runs pretty well for me. I think the only problem I ever had with it is when I was using it with an X11 terminal, an NCD X terminal, it no likes the middle mouse button event. It really doesn't like it. I don't know if that's an X. Well, I mean, it's most likely an unhandled XOR bug, but but trying to submit a bug report for that, it's like, yeah, I'm using this 1990s technology hardware terminal. I'd like you to fix it for me. Kind of jerky. It's like, well, if I really want it fixed, I should probably be the one to fix it and then submit a patch.
Wipe your own ass, I guess. that's one of these days. I'm gonna keep working on it. Maybe like one day, in like 6 months or so, hopefully, like when you can actually talk to a doctor or something, get on your laptop or something like that. 6 months might be optimistic. I don't know. Maybe a year from now or something. I don't know. Who knows? Hopefully. I'm hoping it's going to be the best, but just like pulling up some like Mac iBook.
Baron says, "Bring back PowerPC."
that'd be maximum weirdness points.
And he's like, "Oh, Motorola 68K." It's like, Yeah, I still have some 68K Macs floating around, some compact Macs sitting in storage. I really, really, really am sad that I got rid of my Quadras. Was it a 650 when I had one? But, it would be nice to have again, but oh well.
I got a DEC VT420, too. From the same dude I got this.
Oh, 420. Which color?
It's a orange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's not super. The display isn't super bright anymore, but it's not bad.
Does it have a lot of burn in on it, or not much burn in?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. It was. I mean, I got it.
Well, if it has a lot of burn in, you'll notice it when you turn it off. You'll still be able to read the display.
I don't think it has a whole lot of burn in then. Yeah, I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. I got it for $50. I got this on Ultra 5 for like 20 and stuff.
Did you get a keyboard? Did you get a keyboard and the appropriate adapters for it too? Hopefully.
So I've got a keyboard. I need to get the serial.
It's got the MMJ connectors on the back.
Modular
jack like, but not RJ11.
There's a DB25. I guess what I learned.
Oh, yours
is
has
that
a DB25. Then you can probably just wire up a cable adapter without too much difficulty.
Yeah. Apparently, a parallel is not the same as a stereo.
Yeah. You got to be careful about that. The 420s that I have, I think are all MMJ connectors on them. You know, they've got MMJ jacks on them. So I've got a couple of, you know, DB9. I think I have exactly one DB9 to MMJ and one DB25 to MMJ and a couple of short MMJ cables, short-ish MMJ cables. So I can use them, but some sadness will occur if I damage those cables or
They're hard to find. Yeah.
I don't know that they're hard to find. It's just I haven't come across a lot of them myself. But I'm not a real collector of digital stuff. Although I know enough people that if I probably needed an MMJ cable crimped, I could probably find someone that would do it for me.
Well, that's what I think. Like JWH was saying, like, oh, like, you know, like I make my own cables. Something like that.
Well, I think we had that conversation with was it AGK over her PC luggable? It had a keyboard connector on it, but it wasn't. You know, it wasn't an AT or an XT type connector. It was some form of modular jack, probably an RJ12 or something like that. Although knowing IBM, it might be something more exotic. And she was wondering if there was some way to hook something else into it. And I'm like, well, you probably need to figure out what the pinout is. And my guess is it's going to probably be, you know, XT or AT. You know, if it's you know, an older early generation.
Open VoIP 929-299-1269.
Type keyboard protocol, and you would need to make some type of adapter.
Yeah.
But if it's just an RJ12, that's not too exotic, so that's pretty easy to come by. It's the MMJ stuff is a little less common.
So the Ultra 5, it's got a DB25 serial port on it. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I guess I could just get a 25-pin serial cable and use it with that, but I want to run like Solaris 8 on that thing because I guess you can get Solaris 8 and stuff and I don't know, I like that like what is it like common desktop environment. that's a good looking desktop environment.
Yeah, for its age, it certainly was probably the most stylish. Unified, one of the more unified X11 desktops.
Yeah.
Whereas, like in the open source world, it was like all over the place.
And that's it's got a sticker on. says pre-installed Solaris 8 in Java.
Whether you wanted it or not.
yeah, that's right. I'm gonna make some like CD-ROM encyclopedias on it. I'm gonna develop some like semantic web applications and stuff. But yeah, I think I'm gonna try and get those cables and
yeah, I imagine you can still pretty easily find that stuff if you really want to, if you really need to. I've just been lazy. I like stuff for the low price of just get it the heck out of here, which is how I've gotten a lot of stuff over the years. Like, well, you know, we don't want to throw it in a dumpster, but we don't want it either. Here, come and take it. You can just have it. So some things I've got that are sort of oddball. I think in the case of a lot of my terminals came from a friend of mine who either may have liberated them from a telephone central office or maybe a grocery store chain or something like that that shut down.
Hello? Oh, okay. Yeah. The guy got these. I got the son and the deck from I drove him to Bloomington, Indiana to get those.
Uh-huh.
You know, like where IU is. Works at the library down there, which is.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably had a pile of that stuff sitting in the back room somewhere.
Oh yeah, he said he's had them around for years. Yeah, used to take pallets of it and like auction it off, and like you know, like you get like a whole pallet of stuff for like a dollar. He said he's got like all these like vaxes and stuff, and a bunch. I told him about SDF. I was like, oh, you should get on SDF, because he's just like, it's like, yeah, I finally just like kind of started selling some of the stuff.
And you might actually find a few customers there that'll pay a little bit of money for them.
But I was like, you ever go on public access units? And it's like what public access units? It's like, which one?
Yeah, there are multiples. There have been multiples over the years, but
yeah, I think, you
know, SDF is our public access Unix system. And it could be yours too, the listener.
Back when, I don't know. He's a pretty cool guy. Yeah. What about
not to mention there probably haven't been nearly as many long lived public access Unix systems as SDF is.
Yeah, no way.
That they have a tendency to come and go with certain levels of interest.
He might have been on it back in the day.
There are three other parties in this conference.
Oh, who else do we have? Welcome.
Thank you. I heard Pizza Pal talking about some kind of iBook or some kind of bricked Macintosh product, or Apple product, I should say. I was just thinking, like, okay, I was thinking of like getting like a game watch, putting a game watch on a table, and then putting all of the iPhones and iPods that I have, like a big cluster of them, and saying, which one is vintage? Which one is retro?
Open vault 929-299-1269.
Guess which one is the only one that still fucking works. It's the Game Watch, man. I can't believe it. It's like all of my old iPods are bricked. They're dead. They have issues. First-gen iPod, it has a hard drive problem. It just, it constantly clicks and clicks and clicks.
Yeah, welcome to the wonderful world of high-quality micro drives, right?
And then batteries that won't hold a charge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like the Game Watch is just using two little coin, or not coin batteries, or They are watch batteries.
They are actually watch batteries, right? So they're not a simple cell. They are actually a battery.
Right, and, you know, I guess the first-gen iPod does have a liquid crystal display, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
So I've got an oldish one somewhere in the pile of stuff. Whether it works or not is another matter.
Yeah.
My parents got me a
coming
iPod
up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
Through Hanukkah or some shit when I was a kid. When I was in high school, I was like punk as fuck, you know, like I can't be having an iPod, like I'm gonna fucking post.
Yeah, Salt Lake City, man, Salt Lake, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
That's okay. There's an exception to every rule, right? No.
Yeah.
So what happened? Well,
I gave it to my sister. She liked
what?
It.
Oh my God! So they actually gave you an iPod, and then you gave it to your sister.
You re-gifted.
Wow! Holy cow!
It's like no. It's like, you know, my crew will taunt the hell out of me if I could show up with this thing.
Well. Yeah, nowadays it's like everybody is connected to, you know, the walled gardens, and they've been brought up.
Yeah, branding is everything.
They've been brought up in that whole thing, and they don't know anything else. Oh, it's got to be TikTok. Oh, it's got to be Instagram. It's got to be Snapchat.
Yep.
And it's like anything else you try to talk to a kid about, and they're like, look at you like, What? Are you from the internet?
What brand is it?
Well, it's not even that. It's just about, like, the conception of what is the internet.
The internet is very different.
Very different. It's, you know, when they say, you know, oh, yeah, I saw this video on the internet, they are specifically talking about a commercial service that, of course, they think that it's free because they just signed up for it, but they don't have to pay anything. But in reality,
you are the product.
You are the product. You're the battery. Yes.
You are the
Duracell battery. Yes.
You are part of the matrix.
Exactly. Yeah. So, God, I really hope that Pixel Fed takes off. I'm really interested in what's going on with Pixel Fed and this new version that incorporates ActivityPub and Federation. So, or Federateen, I should say.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
ActivityPub is good. Like, that's like a linked data thing. Like, ActivityPub is really kind of like, it's really kind of like a semantic web sort of thing, really.
Yeah, but, it is. That's right. I mean, it is a communication protocol, the basics of it. And what's cool is that with Mastodon and other things, it's really gaining a foothold. Now, it can go south really quick. Like, you'll
coming
have,
up at 0300
you know,
hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
It with a bunch of, you know, naked
yeah,
photos.
Yeah, right.
And then
you see that
you,
on Mastodon, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you go look at the public feed, the public Fediverse, and you know,
it's good if you like porn. I mean, it's great if you like, you know,
well,
and you feel like a John Martin.
Here's the thing, it's not even good photos, I should say. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that the thing is that it just shows that what Federation is that it's not about controlling content. It's not about controlling, you know, what is this, what is that. It's just...
It's a fire hose.
Yeah, it is essentially a fire hose. It is the raw internet. It is, and you may be offended, you may not be offended, but
you're offended,
it is...
you can self-moderate.
It is reality, and exactly, that is it. Right. You self-moderate. You don't go to your instance and say, hey, this guy from this instance is posting this. You should ban the entire instance. And it's like, no. You mute that person, and then you'll never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in your control. And now you don't have to see that, but everybody else has to make their own decision. You are not making the decision for the masses or the community.
Right.
Yeah, so I really hope that Pixel Fed is still in its, you know, that early time before it gets taken over. Yeah. before it gets taken over by, you know, whatever.